Hi, I'm Nick Rigoretti's, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, the show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. Our guest this week is Mr. Ishmael Bentley. He is a very interesting cat who's got a great story about how he made a late-stage career transition from being a successful inventor to being a full-time Jiu-Jitsu Academy owner. And I know you guys are going to find this story fascinating. Before we get into the show, if you're listening to this, it means our Black Friday sale is now happening. Head on over to store.jiujitsubrother.com and you can get 25% off all of our gis, belts, rash guards, hoodies, t-shirts, and any other jiu-jitsu related training gear and apparel. And also you can get 30% off all our educational books and videos, including my book Beyond the Black Belt and the Black Belt Blueprint. You can also get any of our video series for 30% off, like BJJ Building Blocks and my series with Kit Dale Beyond Technique 1 and 2. So head on over to store.jiujitsubrotherhood and check those out. Anyway, guys, here we go with the episode. Enjoy. Hey guys, welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, and today I'm joined by Ishmael Bentley, who runs M-Theory Martial Arts. Ishmael, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Nick. I'm looking forward to it.
For sure. I just find it so fascinating. You know, you and I don't know each other. It's one of those instances where a good friend whose opinion I value said to me, you've got to have this guy on the show. He's very interesting. And I was like, sure. And based on your name, I had built up in my mind this whole idea of who you were, just based off that one word, Ishmael. I assumed that you're a Muslim guy from the Middle East, and it turns out that you're not, right? You're from Kentucky.
Yeah, I'm actually from Kentucky. I'm from the Southeast United States, and Ishmael is actually my father's name, so that's where it comes from.
Okay, great. So Kentucky, huh? It's a place I've never been, but a previous guest on the show, David Riley, he lived there for a long time, and he swears the people in that part of the world are salt of the earth.
Oh, yeah, the people there are great. So I grew up in the most eastern part of the state in the Appalachian Mountains. So I kind of grew up in the mountains, and then about 20 years ago, actually moved out of Kentucky to the northern United States. So I'm in Minnesota now, but yeah, I've spent most of my life in Kentucky, so.
Okay. Did you ever get a chance to hike the Appalachian Trail?
No, I have not done that myself personally, no.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's always, I know it's quite romanticized and it's probably a hell of a lot of hard work, but it's always been something I wanted to do.
Yeah, I've known a few people that have done it. Yeah, and it for sure, it's a lot of work, definitely.
Yeah. So tell me about yourself, man. How did you come to find yourself in Minnesota of all places? Why did you move out there?
Yeah, so I have a background in engineering and physics. So about in the year 2000, so a little bit more than 18 years ago, I moved mm-hmm. to Minnesota out of graduate school. So I had just finished college actually in South Carolina, so in another state in the southern United States. And Minnesota is actually a hub for healthcare. So, you know, a lot of the large medical companies and health companies are actually centered in Minnesota, which is something a lot of people don't know. And I was looking to go into the medical industry and actually design implants for surgery. And the first job I was offered after graduating in out of South Carolina, Clemson University, was actually in Minnesota. And that was my first job in Minnesota. Minnesota gets very cold in the winter. I assumed I would be here for a couple years, and I'm still here. So a couple years into it, I met my wife, we got married, and about 5 years ago, I opened my own academy. So I'm here for good now, it looks like.
Okay. So tell me a little bit more. I'm quite fascinated by the idea of designing medical implants. Can you give an example of one of the things you created?
Yeah. So I have somewhere between 30 and 40 patents. And I have, you know, several more that are actually pending. They're in process. So I don't have an accurate count. I'm not in the industry anymore, so it's not something I look at specifically. But one of the first things I designed, when I moved here was an implant that actually goes into the spine. So people that go in and have spine surgery and have to have a disc removed, it's an implant that basically replaces that. So
replaces
that's one
a disc.
Yeah, okay. It goes in and actually fuses. So it's not an actual like a disc replacement where you have motion. So it basically goes in, they remove part of the disc and they put in a device and they pack it with bone and actually causes the two vertebrae above and below the disc to now fuse. So that was the first one I worked on. And then from there, there's a whole host of them. I have ones, most of them are spine related. That's where I spent most of my career, but I also have ones for the foot, for the hand, some for like gastrointestinal devices as well. So.
Geez. And I mean, did you ever see, when you were a little boy, did you ever think, I'm going to grow up to design medical implants?
No, not at all. When I was a little boy, what I wanted to do is I wanted to design either cars or I just wanted to design airplanes. And then I remember really specifically when I was, before I went to graduate school, when I was doing undergrad school, I remember I was riding the bus to class one day. And I decided I wanted to do something that would actually impact people's lives directly. And one of my friends at the time had discussed with me that he was considering going to grad school to go into biomedical engineering. So I got a little bit of information on that, and I decided, as opposed to, you know, designing cars or designing airplanes, I wanted to design something that, you know, I could see like a direct effect on people. And that's what led me into the medical industry.
Have you ever met any of the people in which your devices have been implanted?
Yeah, I have. I actually have. I know jiu-jitsu instructors that have some of my devices in them. I've met jiu-jitsu people. I lived in California for a year in 2012. One of the guys I trained with that's now a black belt. I remember being in the locker room with him one day, and he was telling the guys in the locker room about this device he had put in his back that a surgeon had put in. And he basically said, you know, I didn't think I'd ever be able to do jiu-jitsu again, but, you know, I had surgery, I had this device put in. And then I had him explain it to me, and I was like, oh, you know, I invented that. That's the thing in your back is actually something, one of the companies I worked for that we actually manufactured. So, yeah, I know several people in the jiu-jitsu community that have devices I've worked on. And I've met many people through the years that are not in jiu-jitsu, but they've told me they've had this surgery and they explained it to me and it's something I worked on. So yeah, it's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah,
to
I can imagine it's pretty surreal to hear that.
Yeah, it's a cool thing to see somebody that, you know, literally is debilitated and then they have this done and, you know, their life kind of gets back to normal. So it's cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. So why did you stop doing that, Ishmael?
So about 5 years ago, I came back from California. So I was in California working for a medical device company. And I taught jiu-jitsu for about 10 years at a place called, at the time, the Minnesota Martial Arts Academy. It's now called the Academy. That's the gym where Brock Lesnar, Sean Sherk, those guys train. So I taught jiu-jitsu there for about 10 years. And then that's Greg Nelson's academy. So when I went to California, I was gone for a whole year. And, you know, while I was gone, I talked to Greg and said, you know, I'm going to be gone for, I don't really know how long. So, you know, we need to find people to kind of cover my classes. And then after spending a year in California, you know, jiu-jitsu is my love. So when I came back, I talked to Greg and said, you know, I think it's time for me to, you know, have my own gym, because I want to have a gym that's 100% focused on jiu-jitsu. So I came back, and then for the last 5 years, I was doing both. So I was running an academy full-time jiu-jitsu academy that has classes Monday through Saturday. And I was consulting, so I was working for several medical companies across the United States. So I didn't work solely for one. I just worked as a consultant for multiple. And after about 5 years of that, it basically just got to the point where doing both was just unmanageable. So 5 years allowed us enough time to get the academy up and running. The academy is now successful. We've got a few hundred students that train at the academy. And it was kind of that time in my life where it's like, okay, I need to focus 100% on jiu-jitsu, because, you know, my life is basically wake up, I do my consulting, I go to the gym, I get home at 10 o'clock at night, and then I get up the next morning and I do this all over again. So it was just a good time for me to kind of break and, you know, focus 100% on my passion. I designed medical implants for about 20 years. So it was time to move on to what my true love was.
Oh, good for you. And do you not, are you not concerned that running a gym, teaching jiu-jitsu full time might burn you out on it?
No, not at all. My passion is teaching. So I teach somewhere between 20 and 25 classes a week. And jiu-jitsu is what I love. So, and actually teaching it is what I really love. So I teach, you know, I teach everywhere from, you know, kids that are 4 years old up, and I teach all the adult advanced classes. It really is something that I've been passionate about for, you know, I've been doing it for 19 years now. And I have never got bored with it. And ever since I started teaching, I've never got bored with teaching. You know, I look at it as my, you know, it's my purpose to make sure that, you know, my students are getting the best teaching as possible. And, you know, we teach everybody, you know, that's kind of what the name of the gym means. M theory is a physics term. It's often referred to as the theory of everything. And when we opened our gym, we wanted our gym to be something where people could come and train for self-defense, you know, build up their confidence. But we also have these competition classes for the people that want to compete in, you know, large tournaments. So we wanted to have a place, as opposed to, you know, it's either sports jiu-jitsu or self-defense. We wanted to have a place where basically everybody could come to and feel like one big family. And my job basically is to stay on top of, you know, what's going on in the sport of jiu-jitsu, but also to make sure my students that are there for self-defense, they're getting the, you know, the best instruction I can give them. So I don't get bored with it at all.
That's good to know. That's really good to know. What was your route into jiu-jitsu? How did you find yourself training in jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, so I have a black belt in karate as well. So I have a similar background to you know, a lot of people in the United States that do jiu-jitsu. The first thing I ever did is I boxed with some. I never competed in boxing, but the first people that kind of introduced me to the martial arts in general were some amateur boxers when I was in college. So I worked out with those guys for a couple years. And then my oldest brother got me into karate. So I got my black belt in karate. And then I still remember in April of 1999, I finally decided, hey, this is, you know, jiu-jitsu is, you know, seems like this really valuable art. You know, I've got a black belt in karate now. I've done all these things. You know, I need to go find out, you know, is this really what, you know, what people, you know, claim it is? And this is not a lie. The first day I did jiu-jitsu, I stopped everything else I was doing. So I focused on only jiu-jitsu after that. So that's how much I got the bug right away. And that's how effective I saw that it was right away. So as soon as I started jiu-jitsu, that became my sole focus as a martial artist, is I need to understand this as much as I can and be as good at it as I possibly can. So that's what kind of led me into jiu-jitsu.
And to this day, you don't train anything else except jiu-jitsu?
Jiu-jitsu, 100%. When I was at Greg Nelson's Academy, I would train with the MMA fighters. So we would spar and we would do things with them. So for 10 years, I was one of Sean Shirk's primary training partners. So I trained a lot with Sean. Okay. So I trained a lot with those guys, you know, but for me, you know, training with those guys the MMA part of it was enjoyable for me, but it was really to help them get ready for their fights. My passion and love was always jiu-jitsu. So now at my gym, you know, the focus is 100% on jiu-jitsu, and that's what we teach and do.
That's great. And what do you think, as someone who does, who teaches 25 hours a week, what do you think has made the difference in your ability as a teacher? Are there any tips you could give? Let's say there's someone listening to this that wants to open a gym, or has just opened a gym, and they'd like to be the best teacher they possibly can be. What do you think helps?
Yeah, so I really center on my students, and I pay a lot of attention to what they're being successful with, what they're struggling with. You know, as an instructor, I always try to explain to my students. I just don't try to teach them the technique. I try to explain to them, this is why you do the technique, right? This is the scenario that happens. Now, this indicates that this is the situation, so this is the technique I rely on. And as an instructor, I will I will monitor my students. So if I teach a technique and I see that my students are struggling with learning the technique, I will actually like write that down, and then I will go home and I'll try to understand, okay, I showed this technique today. I have this two white belt with two stripes, and for some reason they were struggling to be able to do this. Was that because my explanation wasn't adequate? Is there a simpler way for me to teach this? Is there a better way for me to communicate this? So I'm always trying to figure out, how do I teach in a way that every student can do the technique? So I know a lot of people will keep jiu-jitsu journals, you know, this is what I learned today. But I, as an instructor, I don't have like an instructor's journal, but I do watch very closely my students when I teach something. Are they struggling with it? And then if they are, I go back and reevaluate, okay, I need to figure out how to teach this in a way it's more easily understood for them. As opposed to just, you know, looking at it and say, well, you know, I've got this student and they have a hard time with this technique, but I'm going to keep teaching it the same way. I look at it the other way. I'm like, okay, I need to make sure every student can do this technique. You know, it's not the student's issue if they can't do it. It's the instructor's issue, and I have to be able to teach it in a way that they can do it.
You see, I admire that approach, but, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily always true. I have certain students who, they're just not going to be able to do a Barambolo. It's not because there's anything wrong with the Barambolo. It's just because these people just don't have the physical ability. I mean, it might be a 50-year-old man. It might be some of the neck issue. There might be whatever reason, they might have some sort of resistance to being inverted like that, and they've got some negative memory associated with it. And it's, I don't think every technique is for everyone, or that every student should learn every technique. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't necessarily think every technique could, you know, every student should do every technique. So, I mean, the Barambolo is a good example. You know, I'm not, you know, I have a black belt at my school at 78, right? It's, you know, I'm not going to tell him, it's like, okay, now it's time to learn the Barambolo. I do have an interesting story about that, though.
Sure.
I had the Meow Brothers at my gym, I think 2 years ago, right? And there was a lot of people that came to my gym that are definitely not going to replicate the Meow Brothers jiu-jitsu game.
Fair enough.
But at the same time, they taught what they're known for. So they taught the Barambolo. And by the time the seminar was done, they had everybody in the room being able to at least do the basic Barambolo.
Wow,
so they did an extraordinary job of getting it down to steps, to where even someone that you would look at and think, okay, other than today, this person will probably never do the Barambolo. But they managed to get it down to steps where everybody in the room could at least do like the basics of the Barambolo.
Yeah, and especially considering these dudes don't speak English very well, that's very impressive.
Yeah, so I really thought that was impressive on their part, that they took the time in that workshop to go around, and they broke it down into steps where a lot of the people that came to the seminar, I would have looked at and said, you know, this person's really probably going to struggle doing this seminar, and they did to a point. But by the end of it, they could do the technique. Now, are they going to go do that technique in live training for the next week? You know, that's probably unlikely. But at the same time, like taking that time and effort to, how do I break this down into steps to where at least, you know, the technique I'm teaching is, I can convey the message in the most concise way that people can at least understand what I'm trying to explain to them. I think that there's an art to that in itself, because I've seen a lot of people and they're extraordinarily good at something, but then they struggle trying to like transfer the knowledge to someone else that maybe is not as talented as them. Yeah. And I do. I think everybody kind of in jiu-jitsu, right? You have to experiment. You have to find your game. You have to understand, you know, my game when I'm 20 is probably going to be different than my game when I'm 40, right? And these are just the facts of life. And, you know, that's the process everybody goes through.
Exactly. Do you have a preference for teaching adults or kids?
Oh, I like to teach both. I do. I really do like to teach kids, which I think surprises people a lot of time. I'm 45 years old now, but I love teaching 4 and 5 year old kids. I don't get frustrated with it at all. It's definitely challenging, but that's the future of the art. So I enjoy getting on the mat with the youngest kids, and the adults are the ones that, those are the ones I spend the most time with because we have more adult classes than we do kids classes. So I don't have really a preference over either. I like teaching both.
So, what would you say? This is a bit out of left field, this question, but as someone who it's clear you use jiu-jitsu to help people, and that you have a lot of people dependent on you to learn the art, and especially children as well. When you watch something like this past weekend's UFC, what goes through your mind? Do you think that's helping jiu-jitsu, or do you think that's hurting jiu-jitsu when you see that kind of that drama and that kind of thing take place?
Yeah, I think unfortunately, I think a lot of times that behavior is it's frowned upon initially, but then a couple of days go by and then I think the kind of the immediate gut impact of it wears off, and I think people start to lose like, okay, this something happened at this event, whoever's right or wrong. But there came a point where it boiled over, to a point that it should not have. And I think initially people see that and they're like, this shouldn't have happened. But then 2 or 3 days later, a week later, now the initial impact of it has worn off. And now it's almost like people have forgotten about kind of the situation got out of hand. And now everybody's kind of talking about the aftermath, and everybody has kind of, I think, lost focus on, whatever, the two guys, their issue was with each other, right? The fight had occurred, and now it wasn't controlled in a manner that was, to me, acceptable. So my daughter was actually there. She's 8. She had fallen asleep though, so she did not get to see like all of this transpire. So she missed like the whole last half of the event. But as an instructor of kids, right? I don't think we had any of their kids in our kids class that actually saw it. No, but none of them have talked to me about it. But I think it's important as an instructor that's teaching children, right? You have to convey the message like, you may have an issue with someone, but you need to resolve that issue in an acceptable manner. And when that issue is resolved, then both of you need to kind of agree that we need to move on beyond this. And, in my eyes, I don't think that, what happened in that event, I just don't think was handled well. I think it was allowed to escalate to a point where it became much more than entertainment. It became much more than a show. It became very, very personal. And, there's a lot of parties involved in that. But I think, I watch the UFC. Anytime there's, I think it's a great fight, I want to watch it. But it has become more of sports entertainment than it is about, I think, what is a true martial artist nowadays,
Yeah,
right? I
I
mean,
agree with you.
you see GSP fight. I mean, that's a true martial artist. He practices a martial arts year round. He's always trying to get better at different martial arts. He's very respectful in and out of the ring. He's had his differences with guys he's fought, but when the fight is over, the fight is over. And in an ideal world, right, that would be how everybody that's in the sport conducts themselves. But now, like a lot of things, when money comes into play and you can escalate something and you're going to make more money, people are going to push buttons as much as they can. Yeah. So as an instructor of kids, right, if I had a kid come up and specifically ask me about it, that's what I would say. I was like, hey, this escalated, this became very personal, right? You have to be able to resolve this in a way, these two guys fought, that should have been the end of it. And then, even after they were fought and over, it just kept spiraling out of control.
Agreed. I pretty much agree exactly with you, Ishmael. Vishwan, brother, I really appreciate your time. I mean, someone who teaches 25 classes a week, I can imagine it's not easy finding time to do things like podcasts. So it means a lot to me that you were able to do that. If the people listening find themselves in Minnesota and they want to train with you, where can they find out more information about M-Theory Martial Arts?
Yep. So they can go to www.mtheorymartialarts. That's MTHEORY martialarts.com. That's our website. And then on Facebook and Instagram, it's just M-Theory Martial Arts. So if they look those up, they'll find us. And we're a pretty easygoing gym. So we're always, you know, anybody that's coming from out of town, they're always welcome to come in and train with us, whether, you know, it's a black belt or a white belt. We're always very welcoming. We want people to, you know, feel as much at home in Minnesota as they can if they're traveling and they come into town. So, you know, Great. We're always happy to have visitors.
Great. Thank you so much once again, Ishmael. I really do appreciate that.
All right. You're welcome, Nick. Thank you.
It says a lot about a person's love for the art of jiu-jitsu when they choose to leave a career as prestigious and rewarding as what Ishmael was doing to devote themselves to becoming a full-time instructor. Being a jiu-jitsu instructor is not as easy and glamorous as it might seem to some of you guys. It's actually a pretty difficult job, and it's often not as rewarding as some other careers. And for someone like Ishmael to choose to make a switch, especially that late in life, it really makes me respect him a lot, and I thoroughly enjoyed having him on the show. Anyway, I hope you guys have a great week and that you train hard and that you enjoy Thanksgiving. And I'll speak to you again soon. Peace out.